stamina. 180 words a minute. Ready. Most of you will have had occasion in your lives when you have thought, there are just too many people around. I can't stand it. And it is true that Great Britain is one of the most densely populated areas of the earth. How many people do you think there are in Britain today? Well, the answer is that there are 56 million, and 100 years ago there were only half that number. If you go back farther in time, you will find that there were only 10.5 million in 1801, about 7 million in 1701, and about 2 million in 1101. So you can see how dramatically the total population has risen, especially in the last 100 years. What makes it worse for Britain is that most of these people are concentrated in a few areas. You could take a belt stretching from Lancashire through West Yorkshire, the Black Country, London and the South East, and add it to South Wales and the lowland area of Scotland, and there you would find 5/6 of these 56 million. Other parts are only sparsely peopled. If you take a walk along the Pennine Way, you will rarely see any people except other walkers. Luckily, the rate of growth of our population has slowed down drastically in the last 20 years, and it is calculated that even with immigration, we shall have only 60 million by the end of the century. How has this extraordinary increase in numbers of people come about? The fact is that in the past, the numbers of children dying of various diseases in childhood was horrifyingly high. It was not at all unusual for only one of two or two children out of 10 or a dozen to survive into adult life. Moreover, the level of medical and surgical knowledge was not high, and in any case was not available to most people. Great killing diseases like TB, tuberculosis, bubonic plague, the Black Death, cholera, smallpox and typhus were endemic in the land and sometimes raged in outbreaks that killed off tens of thousands. Most grown-up people died before they were out of middle age. The standards of living were low. Sewage and drainage were bad. Drinking water could be polluted. Good nourishing food was not available in sufficient quantities for large parts of the population. Little was known or heeded in matters of personal hygiene. It is doubtful whether some of our kings and queens, let alone humble peasants, ever had a bath, so people died. It was the result of the Industrial Revolution between 1780 and 1850 that the great humanitarian reforms of Victorian times in the middle and the second half of the 19th century that changed all this. Now most babies live and people survive into their 70s and 80s much more often than they used to do. We eat better food and drink pure water, so we are better equipped to withstand illness and infection. With the great advances in medicine, we have a much better chance of surviving the 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to. And so there are many more of us today than there were in our grandparents' days. But the gains in health and life expectancy may be counterbalanced by overcrowding and by a much greater menace. An economist and philosopher named Amorphous earned fame in 1798 with an essay on the principles of population. In this, he pointed out that while population tended to increase geometrically, 2, 4, 8, 16, the food needed to support this increase tended to rise only arithmetically, 2, 4, 6, 8, and that therefore any rapid increase in population must lead to want, misery and a rising death rate. If the available food is the only check on rising population, then strife, war and death are inevitable. The four horsemen of the apocalypse will be on the march. This was a shock to opinion at the time, but its basic truth remains with us. It has been fended off over the past century. The great increase achieved in the productivity of the food-growing regions of the world. But as we know, at this moment of history, when three babies are born at every tick of the clock, and that is literally true, there are many countries hard put to it to find enough just to keep their people alive, and every year or two there are ghastly famines in some deprived regions of the world. Hence Oxfam, and hence the attempts by governments, especially in the Far East, to try to get family limitation and birth control accepted by their people. The menace is like a cloud on the horizon, which may all too rapidly build up into a devastating storm. From our viewpoint in Britain, we have been behaving in an all too careless way with the little land that we have. Our farmers and our farming methods are among the very best in the world. But we keep snatching tracts of their arable land away from them, often the best of it, to build schools, motorways, hospitals, office blocks, housing estates, power stations, and so on, ad infinitum. Each year we have been losing 50,000 acres in this way. Yet still our agriculture provides a half of all our food needs. But imagine our situation if we were no longer able to import the food that we need to support us. Today we know much more about the people in Great Britain than we did. Censuses began in 1801 and have been conducted every 10 years ever since, except for 1941, when the Second World War prevented the holding of a census. At a census, information is collected not just of the numbers of people, but of all the births, marriages and deaths that occur, and of the housing, the occupation of the people, conditions of work and of living, and indeed a wide variety of useful information. By law, every birth, every death and every marriage must be recorded at a register office. Note that in this country there is no such thing as a registry office. If you find it hard to believe, take a look at your own local one. From these records it is clear that in the last 100 years both the birth rate and the death rate have been steadily falling. These rates are measured per 1,000 of the population, and at the moment the birth rate is about 12 and the death rate is about 11. That is to say, each year 12 babies are born and 11 people die for each 1,000 of the people. At the end of each great war, it is not surprising to find a great spurt in the birth rate. In 1920 up to 26, and in 1948 up to 21. During the same century, from 1875, the expectation of life, how long a child when born may expect to live, has gone up continuously. And for females it is now 75, and for males 70. Maybe you would like to think about this and consider why women live longer than men in this country, and in the Western world generally. There are some dramatic figures that reflect social changes too. For example, there are 8 divorces each year for every 500 married couples. And it is estimated as many separations. One child in every 10 that is born today is illegitimate. That is, the mother is not married at the time of the birth of the baby. Today, nearly 2/3 of all women are married by the time they are 24. And the age of marriage has been going down for some years. The average number of children per married couple is now 2.3. 100 years ago, it was 6. In 1971, which is of course the latest census we have, 92% of men and 55% of women were engaged in paid work, either full-time or part-time. The figure for women in employment is believed to have increased since then. As the pattern of industrial and business life changes, people move about in search of work. And the British people are as mobile as any. 1 in 3 change their place of residence in every 5-year span. Similarly, British people have always been ready to seek a new way of life. Different lands and migration from and incidentally into this country raises many important problems. Still today, there are more people who move out of this country than move in. And there is a net outflow approaching 100,000 each year. Dated from 1977, and that was 2 passages joined together to make a goodly stretch of stamina for you.